AgBioScience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
Basically, we took the fastest growing protein in the world, which is shrimp, and we are tackling it head on, and we are converting this to a sustainable alternative by doing what? Basically, by recreating what nature has done.
Welcome to AgBioScience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinova CEO, Mitch Fraser.
Welcome back to AgBioScience. Food, it's the only economy in the world that touches every person on the planet. And innovation in the sector has been foundational to life since it began. And it's only accelerating. New innovations in biotech, applied artificial intelligence, and even new approaches to production are transforming food. And today's guest is at the forefront. Welcome back to AgBioScience, Daniel Russick, CEO of food tech company, Ataraya. Daniel, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It is good to see you. Just saw you a few days ago in Mexico City. And it's just electric what is happening with Ataraya. Fun to see your R&D operations there in Mexico City. One thing that I believe is so transformational to your approach to food production is something that you've shared, I think, since the first time you and I met. You shared that food production is poised for disruption, particularly in protein. Share more about why you believe this and how you're bringing a new approach to protein production.
Yeah, this has been something that has been in my mind for the past 18 years. I mean, I didn't have anything to do with food production. And it wasn't until I saw the reality of subsistence-based fishing, right, wild caught, that I realized about what's the hidden story behind the food that we eat. And I think that now it's been the past 10 years, 5 years, there's been an increasing interest in questioning where does our food come from, right? And also, it was last week, probably 2 weeks ago, it launched a film, Food Inc. 2 by Michael Pollan. It's interesting, the sequel of a documentary film. And I think that this conversation is just getting more and more and more relevant. And for instance, this idea about sustainability, on the one hand, it's a very important word. And on the other hand, it's a useless word. Because I think that the right version of it, it's rethinking how we are doing things. And the question is, can we do the same for the next 1,000 years? Because otherwise, then it's something that it's not sustainable. But the problem is that because it's also has become a trend, and everybody's talking about it, and it's just like greenwashing and piggybacking on these kinds of stuff, then it kind of becomes irrelevant. But I think that even with those considerations, we need to take this seriously. And I think that we have to think about the transition of basically every sector of the economy has to transition to this 1,000-year perspective, because otherwise, then we know that we're doing it to us. We're in the process of making extinct thousands or millions, I don't know how many species in the world. We are the only ones that are counting. So we are the ones that are suffering, and we are the ones that are having that on our conscience. And I think that's a very heavy toll. I was at the Economist Sustainability event 3 weeks ago, and I met this activist, Clover Hogan, and she's very interesting. In the beginning, I'm not very fond of activists, to be honest, but she was very clear about, it's like, okay, I understand that you guys want to work with technology, but somebody needs to say out loud the things that are not working, right? And also, she talked about this concept that 10 years ago, I would have laughed about, but it's climate anxiety. So this anxiety that if you consider the toll of social media and the toll of being constantly kind of informed about everything that's wrong in the world and everything that is happening, but also at the same time, knowing that this thing is lurking on top of our heads. And if you don't want to talk about climate change, it's fine. We can talk about pollution. We can talk about biodiversity. So it's basically, we're talking about the same thing. So, and we have to consider that as real, because otherwise we just get very sad about, for instance, eating and guilt. That's, for me, that's the thing that interests me the most.
Well, you've been able to strike a really powerful balance. Again, in Mexico City, you're with Governor Holcomb talking about this connection between Indiana, the Midwest, and Mexico. And this idea of sustainability isn't just environmental sustainability. You made the point that it can't just be all environmental sustainability. It actually has to coexist in a world with economic sustainability as well. Both have to be true.
Yeah, because otherwise, it doesn't matter. Because the alternative is basically saying we should all get extinct. And there's people saying that. And the problem is that once you start playing with these ideas, it's like, this is a very completely informal survey that I do, but I ask people about, do you agree that in the future people would be basically eating insects? And most people say yes. And that's sad, because maybe I can share this with you, but we basically did a small short film. And basically, I think I know where that idea comes from. And it comes from Agent Smith. Do you remember?
No.
So Agent Smith in The Matrix?
Oh,
so there's a very
right.
powerful scene in which Agent Smith is basically torturing Morpheus, and it's saying that he's repulsed by the virus, that we are a disease, because all animals, all species get into a balance with nature, and we don't, and we are a virus, we are a disease. And I think that we took that very seriously during the pandemic, when we saw dolphins coming back to the Hudson or whatever, which was very nice. I think that it was very powerful, this idea, or maybe we can keep it like this. Maybe if we go extinct because of this or whatever, maybe it's not so bad. I'm not part of that camp. But I think that that kind of idea, it's a nihilism that has got so much entrenched into our society, into our culture now, that I think that we need to put these ideas on the table. And I think that we need to basically think about how can we get real solutions. And the problem is that we say, okay, technology is going to solve everything. But then what technology? Because $14 billion have been invested in lab-grown stuff. I wouldn't say meat. And there's not a single commercial product after that. So I think it's fraud. I think it's very clear how you call something like that. Then you have plant-based sausages. So these are basically different ideas about creating the best sausage. Nobody can tell you what's in there. The list of ingredients is there. It's ultra-processed food. It's not good for you. It's not good for the environment. So then I think that we are completely confused about what the future of food is. And if you think about it, it doesn't need to be that way. Because in terms of energy, we know how the sustainable energy transition, how it looks like. It's not that the work is done, but at least we have some progress. There's a significant, it's from nothing to a significant portion. And we know what are the technologies that we can count on, what are the boundary conditions, in what way it makes sense, this or that. We actually have a technology development program for the future of this. We don't have that for food.
But you have entered a new approach to food. This idea of bringing production close to consumption, the idea of tackling the fastest growing category of protein, bringing it in a way that's fresh, never frozen. Shed some light on this idea that was the spark that created what is today Otter Raya and specifically Shrimp Box.
So I think that before that, I think that there are four things that we know about the sustainable food transition. One, protein is the biggest challenge. Second, the consumer is not willing to sacrifice their culinary experience in order to save the planet. Third, that the protein is basically at the center of every healthy lifestyle, nutritional guidelines. And also that fourth, we cannot think about food in the future to be relying on fossil fuels. We cannot think about that in a thousand years. Then, okay, so what can we do? So what we do is that basically we took the fastest growing protein in the world, which is shrimp, and we are tackling it head on, and we're converting this to a sustainable alternative by recreating what nature has done. So in the United States, 95% of the shrimp that is consumed is imported. So we can produce local shrimp next to the town. For instance, here in downtown Indianapolis, I did 11 minutes from our farm to here. We just got we are hosting a group of 15 kids, 12-year-olds, to learn about shrimp. And also, thing that I asked was, where does our food come from? Where do you get your hamburgers, right? Because I shared with them, what are you going to see? And they said, fish. And another one said, shrimp. And I said, okay, what do they have in common? They come from the ocean. What other thing? Oh, we eat them. Great. So before, like hundreds of years ago, we relied on hunting bisons or whatever to get our hamburgers. We don't do that anymore. But we are considering that we need to basically chase tuna or chase shrimp around the ocean in order to get our ceviche. That doesn't make any sense. So that now, with our technology, which basically relies on recreating the ocean environment in a controlled tank, in a controlled system, then we can be we can produce food close to the cities. And one of the things that I asked them is, okay, where does their hamburger come from? And the girl said, Kroger's. All right. Yes, in a way. And that's the problem, that we're completely disconnected to where our food comes from. So I think that we can heal that. And I'm using this word very consciously, because I think that if we can find a way for people to reconnect where their food comes from, if it is available locally, it's creating jobs, local jobs, and it's also part of the culinary scene, right? People know how to make shrimp, how to prepare it. People know how to learn. Then it's an enriching experience. It's not a pessimistic and sad experience. So that's what we do. And Shrimpbox is basically a hyper-modular farm based in different kinds of technology, biotech, software, engineering, AI, to basically to be able to grow shrimp anywhere in the world.
Daniel, it's amazing to me, when we first met, it seems like just a couple of years ago, because it was, this idea of a guy who is college-educated economist, not a biologist, not a guy who spent deep time in aquaculture prior to this, from what is on the Pacific Coast, where you'd have to carve out mangroves, create an adjacent shrimp farm. You said, hey, gosh, there's got to be a better way. And to a novice like me, it looks like a rail container with a bunch of gadgets on it, powered by AI, that's optimizing feed, optimizing water quality. You have taken this idea from an idea into a company that's now providing shrimp to some of the top restaurants and the markets here in the States.
So 2022, I already was doing this for over 12 years. And before that, we basically studied the best way to approach it 4 years already. And in those 4 years, what we learned is that basically you have this massive industry, aquaculture, $200 billion industry, in which there is no other fastest growing demand for in terms of protein that is relying on a very old technology. It's like running on Excel 1993. So it will get the job done, but it has many, many problems. In this case, the problems were basically disease. So every shrimp farm, it's under the continuous existential threat of disease. So that brings a lousy financial performance. And also, it creates these massive problems to the environment. I mean, ocean wild catch, it relies on dragging shrimp from the bottom of the ocean. It kills 15 to 20 times more stuff in order for every unit of shrimp. And it kills very important species. And it devastates 2 million square kilometers every year. That's the size of Mexico. That's what we need to destroy in the ocean in order to get our quota of shrimp. So learning this, learning that, even if you destroy everything, you won't be able to get more shrimp than we already get from the ocean. And there's people that over generations have relied on this industry, and then there is no future. So that was very sad. And I don't know. So by learning, by basically interviewing people, hiring consultants, doing business plans, we realized that there was some technologies that provided some hope, right? And there were some interesting. They were very interesting. So I think that's basically, this thing has been driven me by curiosity for the most part. So doing this, so the first thing that we did in Oaxaca, in Mexico, was to build the first farm that didn't rely on the continuous water exchange. And we increased the production capacity something like 60-fold as compared to traditional farming without relying on continuously polluting the ocean. And in order to do this, we basically needed to replicate the ocean environment, the ocean biochemistry in our controlled tanks. Then we started exporting to the United States in around 2018, and we got some interesting high-profile chefs like Chef José Andrés in Jaleo to use our shrimp because it was fresh, never frozen. And at some point, we realized that the best would be to use our technology, to leverage our technology, to leapfrog the whole industry, and to produce shrimp here locally. Because we knew that as soon as we started talking about it, we would have some copycats. And copycats we have. So this is why we published with Aquaculture Magazine a cover story about it was shrimp box, the missing piece of aquaculture. And we basically, we laid out our plans for that. And I think that's where your team basically found us. And I mean, Agrinovus, the IEDC made a very compelling argument for us to basically to come here and to take a look at it because we needed a home. And we listened to the call, and I'm very happy about that. And I think that last week, the governor's visit and your visit and the delegation's visit, I think it was very important. We really enjoyed it. It was a very pleasant moment. I think it was a very deep moment. And yes, coming here, talking to these kids, and it's just the beginning.
It is just the beginning. And there are a lot of elements of tailwind behind Ataraya. We'll learn what they are right after this. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
A healthy company is a blessing. But a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help with health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of healthcare has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. We invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. We're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infbhealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. We're talking with Daniel Russick, CEO of food tech company Ataraya. Daniel, your team has been on a roll in 2022. Time magazine named Ataraya one of the top 200 inventions of the year. It's extraordinary. And just hours ago, we saw that Ataraya was a gold recipient of the Edison Award and went back and dug in through what the Edison Awards are. Oh, these things are, I think you described it maybe best. It's not what it said on the website, but you said that I think the Grammys for nerds. I think
the Oscars for the nerds.
The Oscars for the nerds. I thought it was good. It's amazing. Focused on product design, innovation. I love what the Edison team wrote about your solution. This is from the Edison Awards. It says, Ataraya Shrimp Box revolutionizes aquaculture with AI and biotechnology in a modular system. This innovative solution yields fresh shrimp globally, cuts cost, and triples shelf life. It's scalable, adaptable, and promises top quality shrimp without chemicals, epitomizing eco-friendly shrimp farming. You have to feel like the Kool-Aid man busting through walls when you hear that, when somebody writes that about the innovation you created.
Yeah, it definitely feels very good. So you have an idea, you think about it. I mean, the way that Shrimbox was born as an idea is that I met a guy in Boston. He said, I want live shrimp. I don't care for fresh shrimp. I want live shrimp. And I said, like, that's kind of impossible. Why? Because it's hard, because this, I mean, labor, because of that. And I said, well, so it ended up that this guy is a physicist, really. He's a genius who had an experiment at that time at the International Space Station. So wow. He was grueling me with this, and we ended up coming with solutions, and it was over wine and shrimp. And it was like, okay, so this idea, so we ended up coming up with this idea of hypermodularity and the manufacturing farms instead of building them, and automation in order to reduce labor costs and to improve efficiency, but also consistency. So I came back with my team and I said, I have this very stupid idea. I know that it won't work, but I don't know why. So please tell me why is this thing will never work, so I can just stop paying attention to it and move on. And they said, no, maybe it will work. And actually they started to improve it. No, like for instance, our biotech VP, Andres, said, you don't need that much height. So maybe we can have two tanks. And said, okay, you just doubled the value of the business. So it's this evolution of the idea. And then bringing people together. And also our comms team is very good at relaying what we are all about, because it's not that the Edison Awards come and knock at your door. You need to write a proposal, and then there is this elimination process and blah, blah, blah. So it's fun, but it's also a distraction. It's also a distraction because in the end, it's like we face every day, we face the same challenges. We face the same challenges as any startup about funding, about performance, about the team, about culture, shifting culture. We're bringing a new COO on board. I cannot talk about that too much. We're also finalizing the last details on the round that we're raising. So it's like, at the same time, I think that my mom is the one that can be very, very, very happy about this, because she doesn't need to worry about everything else. She just sends this to her friends and she's very happy.
Well, Mama Russick, if you're listening, know we're really proud that Daniel chose Indiana. We're glad that he's here. Daniel, time for maybe one more question. We could talk all day. You've had big ambitions for growth. You've talked about navigating this journey. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. There's challenges along the way, but give us an idea. What's the ambition for growth? What's ahead? And maybe most importantly, back to that financial piece, like, how can people buy your shrimp?
So we have every month we have farm tours, and we used to have an e-commerce solution, but that was a distraction. So I don't know. So we're tripling our production here in Indianapolis, our production capacity. And right now we are not using at the full potential of our production capacity, because for a couple of years, this has been mostly an R&D facility.
Sure.
Now we have the right protocol, the right technology package, the right mix of feed, larvae, probiotic, but also the right steps and the right protocols that have been tested to get consistency, right? So this year we will be focusing on consistency of the operation that we currently have. We will be tripling our operation capacity. We'll reach 50 shrimp boxes here in Indiana.
Wow.
That's our goal. And we are also in the process of closing a new farm somewhere in the south with an interesting company that it's basically the marriage between data centers and shrimp farming, right? And this is also about this idea of sustainability in terms of, like, for instance, data centers, they use energy for computing, but they also create heat. And then they need to use energy to cool their servers. So we can use that heat, recover that heat, and use it and apply it to our tropical shrimp that they need heat. So
right,
the marriage between these two operations can make it more efficient, but also more sustainable. It's also a good story. So it's also good
Absolutely.
For PR. And if it is profitable, then it's a good business. So right now, we are in the process of, like, 2024 and 2025. We want to show that this is the most profitable animal protein industry in our generation. So if you met somebody that was in the poultry business and started in the 70s, that person is for sure financially very well off, right? If you met somebody in the past 10 years, they got into the poultry business, not so much. They are struggling. So we think that we can take shrimp farming to that financial position where it can be really, really profitable. But in the end, I think the most ambitious part of our mission is that we want to bring back food production into the natural cycle of life. Because right now, I think that's the only way for real sustainability is as what we did is that we basically took a problem that shrimp farmers experience, which is the cycle of nitrogen, the production of ammonia by shrimp. And they right now, they fix it through basically with pumps, just polluting the ocean, right? Using the ocean as a toilet, as both the tap and the toilet. That creates several problems. But nature doesn't do that. So we basically took how nature deals with this problem and just replicate it and then build the infrastructure and the software around it to make it replicable. And we will be able to use part of our waste as organic fertilizer. And this is very important because the reason why there is nobody watering the forest or the rainforests of the world, it's because there is an ecological equilibrium in which plants create carbon dioxide, and they also create protein that animals eat, and then they excrete it through different ways, and then microbes turn these different species of nitrogen into bioavailable nitrogen for plants, right? In this case, ammonia through nitrites and nitrates, and then the plants can absorb, and then it goes back into the circle. So we don't need to reinvent that. There are metabolical pathways for doing all these. We just need to tap into it. So, and I think that what we're doing is just one example. But I think that if we prove it to be successful, then others can join and find similar solutions.
Daniel, I am so grateful that you have chosen to not only invest in Indiana, but spend some time with us here today on Ag Bioscience. He's Daniel Russick, CEO of Otteraya. Thanks so much for investing your time, Daniel.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for tuning into Ag Bioscience. On behalf of the entire Agrinovis team, thanks so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovis Indiana, hosted by Mitch Frazier, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovisindiana.com.